Cale Clark here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Relevant Radio and get a free phone. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com.
Fascinating facts, candid conversations, and some levity to lighten your day. This is the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio.
A thunderous Thursday to you. It's going to be a good one on the Cale Clark Show. Glad you're with me. 888-914-9149 is the number to call toll free to talk to me. 888-914-9149. You can also email the program as always, kale@relevantradio.com. Send me your questions, your show ideas, stuff you'd like me to cover. Always good to hear from you. And you can also get me on Twitter. Grab onto my Twitter handle at Cale Clark, C-A-L-E, Clark with an E, and the show account is at Cale Clark Show. And speaking of Twitter, a viral tweet. I got to talk about this. I've been meaning to talk about this for a couple of days, but had some good interruptions. Bishop Thomas Dowd, who's with the Pope right now, called in yesterday, so I had to bump it to today. There was a very viral tweet that went out a couple of days ago by this guy named Paul Ferry, F-A-I-R-I-E. And his Twitter handle is, well, you can just look him up, but it's at Pauli Sci. It's kind of a play on political science, I think, but P-A-U-L, like the name Paul, I-S-C-I. Anyway, so he had this tweet that went viral, which was a brief history of nobody wants to work anymore. It was a thread, and it was basically consisting of clips from newspaper articles. Some recent, some not so recent. So he's got one starting off from 2022, and this is from, oh, he's got all the citations here, but there was a survey released by Tiny Pulse, that said that 1 in 5 executive leaders agree with this statement: no one wants to work. And these same leaders cite a lack of response to job postings and poor quality candidates, but no one wants to work. You hear this a lot these days. Well, so that's 2022. That one just came out. What about, let's wind the clock back a little bit. Let's go back 8 years to 2014. Here is a clipping from a newspaper in 2014. What has happened to the work ethic in America? Nobody wants to work anymore. It has not always been that way. When I first started to work as a teenager, I saw people work hard. Okay, and it goes on. All right, so 2014, that problem was in existence then as well. What about 2006? The newspaper said in 2006, I can't believe the bad luck I've had in trying, this is from a Q&A segment in a paper. I can't believe the bad luck I've had in trying to find someone to do some needed home improvements. It seems almost like nobody wants to work anymore. And when they do work, they take no pride in what they do. How does one find a dependable worker? Good question. So that was back in 2006. Let's go back to the last millennium, 1999. Let's party like it's 1999, as Prince said, or the artist formerly known as Prince, as he was for a time. 1999. Nobody wants to work anymore, Cecil said. They all want to work in front of a computer and make lots of money. Hey, who doesn't, right? They all want to work in front of a computer and make lots of money. Nobody wants to work anymore. I guess working in front of a computer has not worked to this guy. I don't know. Anyways, let's back it up even more in the time machine. 1981. It was a good year. I think that's when Raiders of the Lost Ark came out, 1981. Farming is my hobby now. But these rocks, I hired 2 boys to clear these rocks off this land last week. But they just fooled around. They didn't want to work. Nobody wants to work anymore. 1981. All right. 1979. Nobody wants to work anymore. That was a quote from a disgusted businessman. No name given, just disgusted businessman. Nobody wants to work anymore. Okay, let's go back to 1969. The age of Aquarius, flower children all over the place. Woodstock, 1969. Last Sunday, the first of the programs dealt with, quote, how it feels to be poor, end of quote. And the upcoming Sunday segment is called Nobody Wants to Work Anymore. Are we seeing a pattern emerging here? 1952. I heard somebody say the other day that everybody was getting too darned lazy and nobody wants to work anymore. That's the truth, if I ever heard it. 1940. And some of you might remember this person, the governor of Wisconsin, Governor Heil or Heil, H-E-I-L. I'm not sure how it's pronounced, but anyways, here's the clipping from the newspaper in 1940. After mentioning the reduction of the $85,000 a year laundry bill for Wisconsin General Hospital by having the laundry done by Wappan prisoners, I guess they saved some cash that way, Governor Heil said he wanted to lower taxes, but the trouble is everybody is on relief or a pension. Nobody wants to work anymore. 1940. All right, 1937. Another newspaper clipping. Orchardists, people who run orchards, complain of a shortage of labor. Faced with a shortage of labor when unemployment is widespread, peach orchardists in York and Adams counties are complaining that, quote, nobody wants to work anymore, end of quote. There is work, it is reported, for 15 to 25 peach pickers in every orchard in the two counties, but only 2 to 5 pickers are at work because of the unavailability of labor. Nobody, it seems, wants to work at peach and apple picking and packing, an Adams County fruit grower declared. So there you have it. That was 1937. 1922, the Roaring Twenties. Maybe they weren't roaring at the time. It was just a whimper back then. What was the cause of unemployment in hard times? The manufacturer and businessmen say it is because nobody wants to work anymore, unless they can be paid enough wages to work half of the time and loaf half of the time. All right, that was 1922. 1916, nobody wants to work. What about vegetables? Hasn't it been a good year for vegetables? The dealer was asked. Well, as near as I can find out, he answered, the reason for food scarcity is that nobody wants to work as hard as they used to. I asked a man who was in here the other day why he didn't raise more livestock and make his own butter. And he said, quote, women don't want to make butter anymore. No sexism there, huh? And then he asked, do you know where prices would go if we raised more calves and pigs and made more butter? They would go way down, but nobody wants to work. 1905. Labor is scarce, high, and very unreliable. None want to work for wages. This is the last one. 1894. Okay, we won't go back any further. We'll do one more. But 1894, with all the mines of the country shut down by strikers, what will the poor editor do for coal next winter? It is becoming apparent that nobody wants to work in these hard times. How am I going to get my coal? No one wants to work in these hard times. That was 1894. Now, here's a bonus one. This is from somebody who commented on this thread on Twitter. This is a pretty good one. And this person was named Flint Dibble on Twitter. And he said, hey, you don't go back far enough. Wealthy people in the ancient world, thousands of years ago, also complained that people didn't want to work. And he gave a quote from a very ancient Roman book. Now, some of you historians out there might recognize this. It's the book Satyricon by Petronius. Okay, so this is ancient from Roman times. Check this out. We hired a man named Corax who complained constantly about the job and kept putting down our luggage and cursing us for walking too fast and swearing that he would either throw our luggage away or run off with all of it. What do you think I am, he said, a pack animal or a cargo ship? I hired myself out to do the work of a man, not a horse. I'm no less a free man than you people, even if my father did leave me a pauper. And not content with swearing at us, he immediately lifted up his leg and filled the street with the noise and odor of flatulence. So, okay, I know it's a little juvenile, but I thought that was hilarious. From the ancient Roman book Satyricon by Petronius. So there you go. It seems like people have said this stuff for a long time. Nobody wants to work anymore. Goes back to the very, very beginning. Hey, what other sayings might deserve this kind of treatment and crack research? Maybe, I don't know, kids these days. Today's music is terrible. I'm sure there's others like that that pop up in every age. So Anyways, this created quite a bit of stir and commentary on Twitter, and a bad theological take as well. You can call in right now if you have a take on this. 888-914-9149 is Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. This idea that nobody wants to work anymore. Well, somebody under the Twitter handle of PhD Hurt Brain, I suppose studying can hurt the brain at times if you're concentrating too much. Tobias Wilson Bates. Now, he wrote this. Quote, no one wants to work, end of quote, is wild. No one has ever wanted to work. It's literally the worst punishment God can think up for Adam. Well, I guess Mr. PhD Hurtbrain, he probably didn't do his PhD in biblical studies or theology, because that's not true. That's absolutely not true. That's a bad take. And a lot of people think this. No one wants to work is wild. No one ever has wanted to work. It's literally the worst punishment God can think up for Adam. That is not true. That is absolutely not true. You know, St. Jose Maria Escrivá, who founded Opus Dei, which means the work of God, he talked a lot about how we could find God in your everyday work. In his book called Furrow, there's a collection of sayings and aphorisms by St. Jose Maria. He said this, work is man's, and obviously women's applies to women as well, work is man's original vocation. It is a blessing from God, and those who consider it a punishment are sadly mistaken. The Lord, who is the best of fathers, placed the first man in paradise. Ut operator in Latin, which means to till and to work. That's what we see in the book of Genesis. The Lord, who is the best of fathers, placed the first man in paradise so that he would work. Now, that's a really, really important point, because if you read the Bible carefully, we talked a lot about this during our Faith Explained series on the book of Genesis. The fact of the matter is that work was in the world before sin came into the world. In the Garden of Eden, God gave Adam a couple of jobs because he was the priest king over all creation, and he was to till and to keep the garden. He was to till and to keep it, or to guard the garden. What's really interesting is that later on in the Old Testament, those words, those same two verbs in Hebrew, are used to describe the work of the priest in the temple in Jerusalem, to till and to keep. So really what's being said here is that Adam is a priest king over all creation, and that the world is kind of a cosmic temple, and that's the way biblically it's been thought of. So work was in the world before sin was even in the world, and because Adam kind of failed in his job in some way, some people think, to guard the garden, that's how the Satan got in and was able to tempt Eve, and then Adam fell for it, and downward spiral, original sin. And of course, the Redeemer was sent. God had a backup plan. It wasn't even a backup plan. This is what he knew was going to happen from the beginning. Anyways, let's not get too metaphysical about this, but the fact of the matter is, before sin entered the world, death entered the world because of sin, and work was pleasant, not involving the sweat of one's brow and toil and tiresome. It wasn't like that before the fall. So God made Adam from the earth and created this world for him, for Eve, and their descendants to take care of, cultivate it, look after it. So this is part of God's plan for us from the very beginning. And if you want to try to shirk that and say, oh, nobody wants to work anymore, including me, you're missing out on a big, big part of God's plan for your life. We have to share in God's creation power. And one of the things that St. Jose Maria also used to say is that man is born to work as the birds are born to fly. We're born to work. I mean, this is part of the deal. If we don't, there's something going on. In fact, some rabbis, I've heard rabbis say this, and it's always interesting to listen to rabbis because there's some amazing takes on stuff. And I don't always agree with everything, but I remember hearing one rabbi say that there's no such thing as retirement. Now, obviously, people do retire, quote unquote, but he said, in reality, there's no such thing. Why? Because the Hebrews have this saying that if there's no Hebrew word for something, then it doesn't really exist. Because according to the rabbis, Hebrew is the language of God, the language of the Bible, the Torah, you know, the first books of the Bible. Of course, we know the New Testament was written in Greek, but you get the point. So there's no word in Hebrew for retirement. So therefore, there's no such thing. God doesn't really want this for us. So we've got to do something. And at some level, that's true. Even if we're not working at our job or 9-to-5 anymore, if we are quote-unquote retired from that, you got to do something. Hey, even if it's working on your... Even if it's working on your chipping and putting, you know, on the golf course, that's work. That sounds like the kind of job I'd want in retirement, quote unquote. It's golfing every day. Oh man, all these guys down in Florida. I must admit, I fall prey to the sin of jealousy sometimes. But all kidding aside, we all know people. You probably do as well. Who really haven't done very well physically, even when they've stopped working. Now sometimes. Work gets a little out of balance in other ways too, and people become workaholics. They make work the be-all and end-all of their lives when it's a means to an end. It's a means to support your family. We can sanctify ourselves in our work, sanctify other people through our work. St. Jose Maria talked a lot about that as well. We spend a lot of our time working, and so it's a big part of our life, but it's not the end. It's not the goal. The goal is sanctity. The goal is heaven itself. But so some people have kind of been out of whack the other way. And when they've stopped working, they don't know what to do with themselves. And then they get into all kinds of bad habits and stop taking care of themselves. And some people get depressed and they die an early death sometimes. But part of it might be because they're not looking at those latter years maybe the way they should. Find another occupation which you can learn in and grow in and do, because God does want us to work. And whether you get paid for it or not is in some ways a different question. So that's it. We got to look at it more from a supernatural perspective. And there's so many parables in the Bible that talk about this as well. The two brothers, right? Jesus mentions this in Matthew chapter 21 when he says, this landowner says to two of his sons, hey, you go work in my vineyard. And one son says, okay, Dad, I'll do it. And then he doesn't do it. He just plays video games all day. And then there's another son who says, I'm not going to do it, Dad, sorry. But then later on he changes his mind. He does do it. So who pleased the father in the end? The guy who eventually did it. The guy who eventually did it. So that's a good parable about that. And so we've got to receive this invitation from God, just like the sons in the parable receive this invitation from the father. And we've got to really dive into it and understand that this is part of how we can sanctify ourselves, even if it doesn't seem from a human perspective that it's necessarily, because the greatest job in front of God is the one that's done with the most love of God. I believe St. Jose Maria said that as well. So we no matter what our job might be, even if other people in society don't deem it as important, if we do it as a service, if we do it out of love of God and love of other people and do the best job we can to try to sanctify that, then that is a job that pleases God. And so it's something we always have to keep in mind. You're listening to the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio, 888-914-9149. If you want to call in, if you're on hold, stay there. We'll get to you right after this quick break. We'll be right back. Hi, this is Cale Clark. Thanks for listening to my podcast. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. They're a pro-life phone company, and 5% of your monthly plan price goes to Relevant Radio or another pro-life charity of your choice. For a limited time, new customers who mention offer code Relevant Radio get a free phone with free activation and free shipping. Don't delay. CharityMobile.com. That's CharityMobile.com. The Catholic Order of Foresters, the sponsor of our studio's line, is hiring today. Several positions are available throughout the United States. Visit relevantradio.com/forester to learn more about how you can find your vocation with Catholic Order of Foresters, an Illinois Life Insurance Society, not licensed in all states. Hey, welcome back to the program. Nice tune there. The Eagles, New Kid in Town. Hey, guess what? When Jesus was on the scene, he basically said, hey, there's a new priest in town, fellas. Jesus was a priest. A lot of people question this. We talked in the first segment about how Adam was a priest king over all creation. And yeah, it's true. Jesus wasn't from the tribe of Levi. He wasn't a Levitical priest, but he's still our great high priest. And he showed it in a lot of different ways. And what does a priest do? Bring people to God. We're going to talk about that in just a second, but I got to get to the phones right now. Jim is calling from Front Royal, Virginia. Hi, Jim. Welcome back to the show.
Again.
Hey, Jim. It's good to, have you on. I can hear you now. Okay, you're on.
Okay, great. So we've always taught our children, and we also work with youth in a couple of other groups. You know, the Lord worked for 6 days. He rested one. Not the other way around. And that's our example. God cannot do anything that is evil or bad. He can only do good. Mm-hmm. So work, therefore, must be considered good.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It is good. It is a good. And like we talked about before the break, work was in the world before sin was in the world. It's not a punishment for sin. Now, some of the strife associated with work is part of the deal, part of the consequences of sin for sure. You know, gotta, you know, dig for that fruit in the ground, you know, and really, really till with hard labor. But having said that, work itself is a gift for sure. And that's an important point to make. God himself worked, and not only in creation, but of course in the person of Jesus of Nazareth. He worked, of course, with his foster father, St. Joseph, who was a true father to him, of course. And we mentioned that the other day on the feast of Saints Joachim and Anne, the grandparents of Jesus. They lived in a big city called Sepphoris. You can check out our Mysteries, Miracles, and Mary series on Relevant Radio on our website and see the little video I did about that and some big building projects that went on there. And so, and again, I've quoted St. Jose Maria about 4 or 5 times already, but I got to quote him again. One of the things he used to say was, you know, Take young Jesus as a model, right? Like whether we're young or old, his you know, the fact that he knew his faith well. He could go to the temple as a young man and debate with the teachers, the doctors of the law, when he was quote unquote lost in the temple in Jerusalem, and his parents found him. What are you doing? You know? And also, we also have to take Jesus as our model in Joseph's shop, in his workshop. You know, work and study, study and work. It's a great way to think about it. We've got to know our faith really well so that we can live it out in work, in family life, in all kinds of different situations in the world. Thanks so much for that call, Jim in Front Royal, Virginia. Did I see Andrew on the line there, Jim, on line 3? Is he still there? Oh, okay. All right. So let's go to line 2. Thelma from Arizona is on line 2. Hi, Thelma.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
Can you hear me?
I can. Yeah, it's a little scratchy, but I think I can hear you.
Okay. I told the gentleman that at the phone, I'm a Native American.
Okay.
And I was wondering what your thoughts are of the Pope visiting the Indigenous people of Canada.
Yeah. Thelma, thank you so much for that call. And as your phone is breaking up there just a little bit, but you could just go back to your smartphone or your radio, wherever you're listening to the program, and I caught what you said. What do I think about the Pope's visit to Canada? Well, yesterday, I don't know if you heard the show yesterday, but definitely check out the podcast for yesterday's Cale Clark Show, because joining me live on the show was Bishop Thomas Dowd. He's one of the bishops who's been traveling with the Pope throughout this journey, and one of the things that he said was that the Holy Father, he's canceled a lot of trips that he was going to make around this time. And he's not in the greatest of health right now. We need to pray for him. He's got a bad knee. He's got lots of other things going on. He's 85, right? He's got a schedule that much younger people would have a hard time with. He's really, really tight for time. And they have to work all these little breaks for him to pray and just have just a few moments of quiet time. He's got so many appointments and visits on this journey, as he always does. But he didn't cancel this trip. This is one trip that he did not want to cancel, and he promised that he would, Lord willing, be able to make it here and to offer the apology that he did earlier this week for the role that a lot of Christians, Catholics played in some of the atrocities that were committed in the residential school system, with the blessing of the government as well. It wasn't like church people were acting alone by any stretch of the imagination. Not everybody did. There were many people who tried to care for the children, but there are others who didn't and committed some heinous evil. There's no question about it. So I think it's good that he did it. Bishop Dowd had some really good reflections on it and really the meaning of forgiveness. It's not just a moment in time, but it is a process of healing. And so check out that show, Thelma. You might be intrigued to listen to that. It was yesterday's Cale Clark Show podcast. Maybe producer Jen can put a link to it in the show notes. So yeah, this going back to this whole concept of Jesus as priest. There's a new priest in town. Well, when did he say that? Well, he didn't really say that, but he did something that basically said that. Because, the old line, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, quacks like a duck, it's got to be a duck. Well, Jesus is doing things and saying things that really only a priest could do when you look at the Gospels. And a scholar named David Schrocker wrote a little piece about this, the five ways that we see Jesus acting like a priest. Well, one of the things that priests did was teach the law. Priests really did five things. They taught the law, they purified the unclean, like lepers and all that sort of stuff. They cleansed the temple. Now, we know about Jesus cleansing the temple, but that was kind of a regular duty of a priest in the temple. Now, not to do it in the way Jesus did necessarily, like making a whip out of cords and whoosh, no, go Indiana Jones on you. No. But they did have to clean the temple, okay? Priests also provide people forgiveness of sins. And of course, they pray. They intercede for others. And they make sacrifice. They make sacrifice to God. That's part of the deal. So let's look at how these things play out in the life of Jesus. Number one, the first thing Jesus did that a priest does is teach the law. And what was the message of Jesus when you think about it? At the end of the day, it's the kingdom of God. That's what he talks about all the time. His message is about the kingdom of God. It's all over the Gospels. It's bursting off of every page. Well, that's kind of a priestly message because he's not talking about politics, okay? As G.K. Chesterton said, the two things that you're not supposed to talk about at parties, politics and religion. Well, that's kind of crazy because they're the two most important topics in the world because religion has to do with love of God and politics is really love of neighbor. How do we live together? And so love of God, love of neighbor, that's the great commandment, right? And so it's kind of weird, but we're not supposed to talk about that. But we know that we have to. We do it obviously in delicate ways, but Jesus's message was not a political message in the sense that he wasn't talking about how to overthrow the Romans and let's do battle against Caesar. And that's what a lot of people wanted him to do. That's what a lot of people expected the Messiah to do in Jesus's time. And in fact, there's a group of people that lived out in the Dead Sea region. You've heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls. They were known as the Essenes, and they had this little community of their own, and they wanted to start this apocalyptic war. And they thought at the end of time, they actually thought there was going to be two messiahs. They thought there was going to be a priestly messiah and a kingly messiah. And the kingly messiah was going to kill the Roman emperor in a battle. And they called him the king of the Kittim, the Roman emperor. And so the kingly messiah was going to go on horseback and run him through. Just like a knight's tale or something. But obviously that's not what Jesus came to do. Now he is in one person. There's not two messiahs. There's one. And he is not only priest and king, he's also prophet, priest, and king. And we share in that threefold office through our own baptism. So what does Jesus do? His message is about the kingdom, and that includes what? Forgiveness of sins. What does he say to the paralytic, right? Get up. Before he says, get up and take your mat, he says, your sins are forgiven. That's the most important part. Yeah, even if I heal you, you're going to die at some point. So your sins need to be forgiven. That's key. So he does that. And that's what the priest did in the Old Testament time as well. If you read the book of Leviticus, it talks all about this. His teaching did a lot of stuff that reflected the work of the priests in the Old Covenant. So if you look at, say, Matthew chapter 4, okay, it says in Matthew chapter 4, verses 23 to 25, it says, he went all throughout Galilee, teaching in their synagogues, and proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom, the good news of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every affliction among the people. So his fame spread throughout all Syria, here, there, everywhere. And what do you see when you look at the book of Leviticus. In Leviticus chapter 10, verse 11, it says, "You are to teach the people of Israel all the statutes that the Lord has spoken to them by Moses." So teaching was a big part of the job of a priest in the Old Testament. The book of Malachi, Malachi chapter 2, verses 6 and 7, it says, "True instruction was in his mouth, no wrong was found on his lips. He walked with me in peace and uprightness, and he turned many from iniquity. For the lips of a priest should guard knowledge, and people should seek instruction from his mouth, for he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts." So that's a good verse that kind of speaks to this. So teaching was key. But also, what's another thing that the priests did in the Levitical time? Well, they would separate the clean from the unclean, right? And there's all this stuff that for example, if somebody had leprosy, and that was an unfortunate sickness in Jesus' time, it was all over the place in the New Testament world. And Jesus did the same thing. He cleansed people. He pronounced people who were unclean. He pronounces them as clean. Now, you couldn't actually do that unless you were a priest. And so, remember that leper that comes up to Jesus in the gospel, and he says, "If you are willing, you can make me clean." And a leper would literally have to run out and call out, "Unclean, unclean," so that nobody came into contact with him. Because if they did, then they'd have to go ritually cleanse themselves. It's a bit of a pain. I've got to go to the temple. I don't want to deal with this. So they'd steer clear. But Jesus not only draws near to the guy, he actually touches him. And Jesus says, "I am willing. I do choose. Be made clean." And the guy's healed instantly. And so Jesus doesn't become unclean by coming into contact with him. He makes the guy clean. He radiates holiness and healing. So it's just incredible. So that's what priests do. It's just all over the place. So what happened to the ten who came to be healed of leprosy? To him, he says he heals them, and then he says, "Go and show yourselves to the priests." Why does he say that? Show them that you're clean. Show them that you can get back into the liturgical life of Israel, and you're good to go. Well, basically, Jesus is saying, "Hey, there's a new priest in town," because only a priest could do that. So I'm putting you on notice that here's who I am. I am the great high priest. So this is interesting too. There's other stuff about his teaching that's all over the place. The Sermon on the Mount. We just did this series on the 10 Beatitudes on the Faith Explained. You can look it up in the archives. And yep, there are 10, not 8. I counted. You can check out the series for more on that. And that the sort of blessings that are in the Beatitudes, blessed are the poor in spirit, all that sort of stuff. That's exactly the kind of thing Aaron said in the Old Testament. Who was Aaron, the high priest, the brother of Moses? What did Aaron say in the book of Numbers, chapter 6? "The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace." That's the big benediction, right? And Jesus does that. He says, "Blessed are you, blessed are you, blessed are you." It's a priestly thing to do. So that's a clue that Jesus is priest. Now, he doesn't come out and say, he doesn't wear a t-shirt saying, "Hey, I'm the great high priest," but he's saying and doing things that only priests could do. So this is all over the place in his teaching. So how about that? Also, what's kind of cool is when Jesus says in the Lord's Prayer, "Give us today, give us this day our daily bread," that also is very reminiscent of something that happens in the book of Leviticus. In Leviticus chapter 24, it talks about the showbread. It says, "Take fine flour, bake 12 loaves from it." This is in Leviticus 24. 2/10 of an ephah shall be in each loaf, and you shall set them in 2 piles, 6 in a pile, on the table of pure gold before the Lord. This is in the temple. And you shall put pure frankincense on each pile, that it may go with the bread as a memorial portion, a food offering to the Lord. Every Sabbath day, Aaron shall arrange it before the Lord regularly. It is from the people of Israel as a covenant forever. It's a most holy portion of the Lord's food offerings, a perpetual due. So bread has always been kind of part of the priesthood. And of course, there is the Eucharist, where Jesus takes ordinary bread, transforms it into his body, blood, soul, and divinity. And that's what happens in our ministerial priesthood, of course, as well, in the Catholic Church all over the world. You're listening to The Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. So that's, I could just go on and on about that. but also his healing. We sort of touched on this already. His healing is also an activity of priesthood. Talked about leprosy and how Jesus kind of rendered this verdict on it. And then a third thing is that, let's get into this whole thing about cleansing the temple or purifying the temple. So if you look at the books of Chronicles in the Old Testament, 1 Chronicles, 2 Chronicles, you see how the priests, they actually sanctify the holy place. And they had to do that. They had to kind of cleanse the temple because, unfortunately, throughout history, some bad kings did some bad things in the temple. They brought idols into the temple. Think about when the temple of Jerusalem was ransacked and destroyed in 70 AD, right? You know, remember the famous Arch of Titus in Rome. There's that carved in stone, you know, the Roman army taking things like the menorah and all the treasures of the temple out of there. Well, of course, the temple was destroyed at that point. But the old temple, the first temple that King Solomon built, that was also destroyed by the Babylonians, and they did some bad stuff in there. Well, the priests had to purify the house of God so that worship could happen there again. And that's kind of what Jesus is doing in Matthew 21 when he's driving out the money changers. But he doesn't get somebody else to do it. He doesn't call up the local priests and say, hey, can you guys do this? He does it. He does it. He says, my house shall be called a house of prayer. And that's a quote, by the way, from Isaiah chapter 56, verse 7. But you have made it a den of robbers. So he's the one doing it. He's the one doing the cleansing of the temple precincts because he is the great high priest. And by the way, one of the things that ticked him off, why did he do that? A lot of people wonder, what's the purpose of his action in the temple? Why is he dragging out the money changers and all that stuff and turning over their tables, those who are selling doves? Well, people did need to have these animals for the sacrifices in the temple. At feast times, people would come from all over the world. What was happening was the money changers, you had to buy it in the local currency, your turtle doves or whatever you're going to use, and they're ripping people off on the exchange rate. Not only that, all these animals are walking around in the court of the Gentiles. That's where the Gentiles were supposed to come and pray, but there's droppings everywhere. This is just not appropriate. This is not the place for that. So that's why Jesus was upset about it. It was happening in the wrong place, in the wrong way. So that's it, purifying the temple. That's a work of a priest as well. Number four, the fourth thing that a priest does that Jesus also does, of course, is forgive sin. And I mentioned earlier the paralytic, the paralyzed guy in Mark chapter 2. His friends lower him through the roof. And when he says, hey, take heart, son, your sins are forgiven, the scribes, they say, well, they're thinking to themselves, who can forgive sins but God alone? That's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. Well, easy to say that. Hard to prove it. How do I know this guy's sins are forgiven? Yeah, you said that, but words are cheap. How do I know that they actually worked? Well, that's why Jesus heals him. He does this healing miracle. He says, so that you may know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins, he says to the paralyzed man, I say to you, rise, pick up your bed, and go home. And he does it. So if I can do that, I should be able to do the other thing. If I can do the thing that you can see, this miraculous healing, maybe I can heal the guy's soul that you can't see. So that's the point. But they got it. They kind of got it, that only God can forgive sins. So Jesus is basically saying, hello. It's one of the best proofs, I think, of his divinity in the New Testament. And so God always pronounced forgiveness to Israel through the priests in the book of Leviticus. So again, that's another way of saying Jesus is like our great high priest, and he's making that known. And then the last thing is point number five, he prays for his people. He prays for his people. Now, anybody can pray, so just praying doesn't make you necessarily a priest, but he prays at really unique times. He prays at all times, but when he selected the 12, he was up all night praying before he picked them. He's praying on the Mount of Transfiguration when his glory is revealed. He's praying in the garden before he is arrested. And he's praying for people according to what they need. That's a great point that was made by David Schrock. Like, think about how he prays for Peter when he says, you know, Peter, Simon is, he called him by his old name, Simon, Satan has demanded to sift you as wheat, but I've prayed that your strength may not fail, your faith may not fail. It's in Luke 22. And his old name, Simon. Simon means reed. Think about reeds swaying in the wind. Very unstable. Not the rock that he wanted to be, but prayed. And he says, when you turn back, he kind of knew that he would drop the ball. when you have turned back, strengthen your brothers. Strengthen your brothers. He's praying for those who are trying to kill him. Father, forgive them. They do not know what they do. That's in Luke 23. And then, of course, there's that great high priestly prayer in John chapter 17, where it kind of goes on before his arrest. It's a wonderful passage of scripture to look at. Jesus is praying on the cross. Just like the high priest of old would raise his hands to bless the people, his hands are raised on the cross, and that's what he's doing. When he lifts up his hands at the ascension, Luke chapter 24, he raises his hands to bless them as he's being, as he takes himself up on his own, under his own power as God, to the glories of heaven. And so that's what a priest would do, blessing the people. So really great piece by David Schrock. Priests teach the law. That's what Jesus did. Purified the unclean. Yep. Check. Cleanse the temple. Absolutely. Forgive sins. Yep. You know it. And he prayed for his people. All things that a priest would do. So, and of course, Hebrews tells us Jesus is our great high priest. You know, so if you didn't already catch this from the Gospels, I'm just going to tell you this is what's going on here. So he's priest, prophet, and king. And that's a little meditation there on his priesthood, because a lot of people question, did Jesus think of himself as a priest? I do think he thought of himself as our great eschatological high priest. We'll be right back on the Cale Clark Show, 888-914-9149. Got a really unique, kind of interesting story from the world of business for you after the break. You're going to want to stick around for this. 888-914-9149. Be right back.
Explaining the faith so you can explain it to others. It's the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, welcome back to the program. 888-914-9149 is the number to call. Got to go to the phones right now. Karen is on the line from Pennsylvania. Hi, Karen. How you doing?
I'm good, Cale. How are you this evening?
I am fantastic. Thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
You bet. Well, I'm calling with a comment about the earlier topic that you were discussing about work. And here's, I'm curious about any ideas or thoughts that you might have as to how we could transform the culture to recognize the importance of the work that a mother who chooses to stay at home to raise her family does.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a great question, because and I don't know that we'll ever get the culture, quote unquote, to fully appreciate that. And now, having said that, there are lots of moms out there who are out in the workforce, and sometimes they don't want to be, sometimes they do want to be, and they choose to do that. And there's some people are down on moms who actually do have jobs out there, and I don't think that's right either. But I do think that motherhood, parenting, that is, if it's not the most important job, I don't know what could possibly be. And dads as well obviously have a crucial role to play, and that can't be abdicated either. And I think in so many ways, like, just kind of building our own culture is really important. The culture of one's own family is really important, because that sets the tone for so many things for people later in life, how they interact with others, respect, hard work, manners. They see all that prayer. They see all that inculcated in their parents in the home. So parents who are faithful and do their best at that, and it's not easy. It's not at all easy. And so many moms and dads out there are trying to homeschool over the last few years, and they're more homeschoolers now than ever, basically because of the pandemic, but also because a lot of people are of the mind that I don't want to entrust my kids' education to a public school system that may have values inimical to my own and to the Catholic faith. And so, but I think it's so crucial. I think it's unfortunate that motherhood and parenting are not valued as much as they ought to be. And so it's intriguing. Like, your question actually raises a lot of thoughts that we will have to get into on another show. But what do you think, Karen? Let me ask you, do you have any ideas about how society can maybe value moms a little bit more and their impact?
Well, my own personal experiences are as a stay-at-home mom for the past 26, almost 27 years, actually. And so I feel like moms need to be empowered and feel really proud of that choice that they made to do that, to focus on, you know, raising their children. And maybe just some of the things that happen with children as they're younger, like you were describing, the, you know, the tone that you set in your home, the values that a parent instills in their child, like those are all really critical pieces that have to happen. And so I guess I would hope that somehow our society could just focus on that more. And, you know, there's campaigns for everything in this world, right? So maybe there could be some campaigns about teaching virtue and teaching values and like, you know, raising parents' awareness of how critical that is. And then ultimately in the whole culture, it could be recognized more. I don't know. I'm just, I just wanted to put it out there as a question, see what your thoughts are. I mean, I'll tell you an example. Sometimes I'm asked, well, what do you do? And if I say, well, I've been a stay-at-home mom, like the conversation ends. It's like in too many cases, people's worth is based upon what their job outside of their home is.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's so true.
That's not right. You know, I feel like people could carry on a conversation and say, oh, well, you know, tell me more about what that experience is like. Or now that your children are older, how do you spend your time? Do you volunteer in different avenues and areas and that kind of thing? You know, it's like when they learn that you're a stay-at-home mom, then they have nothing else to ask you.
They just kind of shut it off. Yeah, it's true. I mean, as has been said by many, you know, are you a human being or are you a human doing, right? And we always want to judge people by what they do. We want to size people up. It's one of the first questions that people ask when they meet you. And yeah, and it's sad that people that stay-at-home mothering is denigrated. And it's not just, there are a lot of dads who stay at home as well for different reasons. And this kind of opens up a lot, and maybe somebody else wants to call in too. If you have a take on this, 888-914-9149. I do think that just parenting in general is so key. And there was a guest that was on the Drew Mariani show last hour, Dr. Meg Meeker. She's somebody that I really like her takes on parenting. She's written some books. Boys Should Be Boys is one of the books. Strong Fathers, Strong Daughters. That's a great book as well. So she's got some really good stuff on parenting and how crucial the role of mothers and fathers are in so many ways. And especially when it comes to a Catholic perspective, we have to remember that is one of the promises that you make as a Catholic parent at your child's baptism, that you will be that first educator in the faith. You will seek to inculcate the gospel in them. And I think one way of looking at the family and the home is it's like a little seminary, right? It's the domestic church. And the word seminary means seedbed. And of course, we want those sprouts to grow, right? The sprouts of faith. And you know, our children are like plants in a certain sense. That's what the Bible says. In one of the Psalms, it says, your children shall be like olive shoots around your table, like plants growing, and they're getting bigger. And hopefully they will provide the fruit of the kingdom as well. So Karen, that's a really interesting point. It's a good point. And that is, that may be your work. If you're sitting there wondering, okay, well, I don't have a quote unquote job per se, but that is work. That is real work. Parenting is absolutely the most important job, for sure. So we've got another comment here from an off-air caller. Thank you, Karen. There's Karen from Pennsylvania. off-air caller is saying, and didn't want to come on air, but said, this country now only seems to recognize money. I used to work in Hungary. The government there gives tax credits and other incentives to help families with children. Yeah, I have heard about that. I don't know too much about the situation, but I do know that in some countries like Hungary and maybe some others as well in Europe, there is a sort of a recognition that strong families do make a strong society. The family is the cell of society, and when the family begins to break down, a lot of social ills inevitably follow. So even if you're not a religious person, it just makes good sense that you'd want to have stable families in your society. We all come from some sort of a family. And that's one thing that Our Lady said, right, at Fatima, that the last war that Satan will wage upon the world and the church is a battle against marriage and the family. And we see that in so many counterfeits to it and the breakdown of the family. If you flood the society with counterfeit currency, it devalues the real thing. And that's what we're seeing here. We need to get back in touch with reality. That's the word of the day, the word of the decade, maybe the word of the century, reality. It's all about getting in touch with reality, the way things really are in this world. And what's real for sure is that Christ came to save us, to give us that example, and to help us to become saints. That's real. And we're keeping it real here on the Cale Clark Show on Relevant Radio. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back 23 hours from now, so set your clocks, set your timers. Stay tuned for Timory and Father Rocky coming up after that with the Family Rosary Across America. Maggie and Thomas took your phone calls today. Producer Jim Shaper, Cardinals won. He's happy. He produced today. Take it away, Michaela.
Thank you for listening to my daddy.